Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Drinking a little drink, smoking a little smoke, getting down to business.
For ourselves and for future generations, a new world order.
Blue checkmark ass fucks.
We know that the best is yet to come. God bless you and God bless America.
You gotta go down the hole.
And Corn Pop was a bad dude. And he ran a bunch of bad boys.
The world is fucking burning.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Nikola Tesla is my boy.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy.
How we doing, people? It's your boy, it's your host, it's Mitch Vuk, coming at you. Another episode, Down the Rabbit Hole podcast. This is episode 6, and boy do I think it's a good one. 9/11 is coming up in a few weeks, and I figured it was a good time to go down that hole and red pill everyone who hasn't been red pilled on 9/11 yet. Because I don't know exactly what happened that day, but I know the official story is full of shit. And again, I won't talk too long in this intro. The interview was kind of long, it's about an hour, so let's just get right into it. But first, we're going to hear a word from our sponsor.
All right, people, welcome to the pod. Today, we're going down the rabbit hole with my brother, AJ Vuk. If you know me, you probably know him.
Hey, guys.
Hey, there he is. Today, we're going to talk about 9/11. It's coming up in a couple weeks, and I figured that would be a good subject. It's a good first red pill for a lot of people that aren't into the conspiracy world. And I'm just going to let him kick it off. And we're just going to do a brief overview on a lot of the things that the mainstream story, what they said officially happened, how that is just a complete fabrication and a cover up. So, AJ, go ahead whenever you're ready.
Yeah, so thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. I'm AJ, like Mitch was saying. Follow me at AJ Vuk, AJVUK on Twitter and Snapchat. I'll be posting some links to a Google Drive doc that I made that has some references to YouTube videos and facts that I've kind of compiled for this. So if you guys want to check that out, reach out to me and I'll be glad to send that over to you. That way you guys can kind of do some own fact finding of your own. I am going to prelude with, I am no expert. I do not know exactly what happened on 9/11. I just know that what we are being told from our government and the official story is full of holes and inaccurate, in my opinion. So I'm going to lay out some facts and some things that you guys might not have been aware of or might never heard about before that might open your eyes or raise some questions into what actually happened on that day.
Yeah, that sounds great. Do you want to start out with the flights that were hijacked or the bushes beforehand, or what do you want to get into?
Okay, so yeah, we will kind of go into a brief timeline. I'm sure a lot of people know what happened on that day, but we'll just kind of give a brief overview of like what happened on that day, what time, etc. That way we can kind of reference what we're talking about. So on 8:46 on the morning of September 11th, 2001, American 11 was already hijacked at this point and crashes into the World Trade Center North Tower. That was the first building to be attacked. It was videotaped only one time ever. There was a French documentary crew. I believe they were following around a New York fire department group videotaping them, and they heard a plane whoosh overhead, and he pans up to the World Trade Centers, and you can see the plane smack the World Trade Centers on the broadside. It's the only known video of that plane hitting that building. So that's 8:46 a.m. News cameras, everybody in the world's looking. They're not really sure what happens at this time. They think it might just be a little benign accident. Somebody hits the World Trade Center, you know, it was New York, airports all around. Could have been an accident. 17 minutes later, though, another plane, United 175, everybody's seen this from multiple angles. 9:03 crashes into the World Trade Center South Tower, broadcast all over the world, and is still used this day to kind of just bring 9/11 back. They just show that iconic picture of the two towers with a giant flame ball around the one tower.
Right, yeah, the plane crashes into it, and on the other side, you see the giant fireball come out, yeah.
Yep, just exploding around it. So that's at 9:03. Half an hour later, the Pentagon is attacked by American 77. At first, they weren't really sure what happened. They weren't sure if it was a plane or what. They thought maybe a bomb went off. So that happens a half an hour after the second tower was hit. The next event to happen is the South Tower. So the second tower that was hit, the one that everybody saw got hit, collapses after only burning for 56 minutes. It does a complete collapse into its own footprint after burning for 56 minutes on the upper floors. 4 minutes after that, supposedly United 93 crashes down in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, you know, something that kind of hits home to some of us that know me and Mitch. You know, it's only about an hour and a half south of where we live. Crashes at 10:03 a.m., and we'll get to that later. Half an hour after that, or 25 minutes after that, the North Tower, so the first tower that was attacked, collapses after about an hour and 46 minutes of being on fire from 8:46 to 10:28. And that's kind of where things conclude for the most part. You know, obviously, the world is in shock. The financial hub of the entire United States and more or less the world has been in complete ruin. Markets are shut down across the world. And everybody's going, what the hell just happened? You know, the last hour and a half from the time that the plane hit the second tower to the time that the second tower collapsed, everybody is just kind of hands on their head like, what the fuck? And then, you know, 7 hours later, World Trade Center 7 collapses after never being attacked by a plane and is due to, quote, structural office fires from the National Institute of Science and Technology, NIST, that we'll talk about later. Right. And, it, you know, it was reported on before it actually happened. And there's all – the World Trade Center 7 is like the smoking gun for a lot of people on World Trade Center. But that's kind of the brief overview of, you know, what happened on that day and – kind of like the four different planes that were hijacked by these 19 supposed Muslims.
Right. Yeah, that lays out a pretty good timeline for the mornings of the attacks. And I know from my personal research that World Trade Center 7, like you said, is the smoking gun. Multiple hours after all these things collapse, it also collapses free fall speeds into its own footprint. And the news actually reported, several different news sites reported 10, 15 minutes before it collapsed. You can see it in the background footage that's still standing. They said, we just got word that World Trade Center 7 has just collapsed. So that just sets it up for a really sketchy thing, you know?
So, yeah, so that definitely is the smoking gun, in my opinion. The most popular report that kind of broadcast that, like, yes, they reported that this building fell before it actually fell, is a BBC news broadcast where the woman, they, you know, they say, hey, and now we're going to go to so and so, and they show her with a live feed of New York City behind her, and she says, you know, hey, you can see the smoke from the buildings falling behind me, and over her shoulder you can actually see Building 7 still standing in the frame. She reported it about 20 minutes before it actually happens, and like I said, in that Google Doc that I have, I have a YouTube video that links it, so if you guys are interested, you can check it out. So where do you want to go, Mitch? Do you want to kind of talk about things that led up to 9/11 that were fishy? Do you want to talk about a specific, you know, New York, Shanksville, Pentagon? Where? How do you want to break this up?
Well, we can break it down one by one, how there was no wreckage at Shanksville, no wreckage at the Pentagon, how both of those supposed attacks are pretty much 100% fabricated.
Yeah, let's start there, because a lot of people don't really know a lot about those two. They kind of have an idea, but, you know, the stuff that happened in New York City, excuse me, is kind of the most documented and the most mainstream information. You know, when everyone thinks about 9/11, they think about the two towers. So, let's start with Shanksville, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go right ahead.
So, like I said, supposedly at 10:03 a.m., Shanksville, Pennsylvania, United 93 crashes with 45 people on board. That includes flight crew and passengers and terrorists, alleged terrorists. And they, you know, it's basically a 20 by 60 foot hole in the ground that they said the people on the plane overtook the cockpit, and the people in the cockpit decided to nosedive the plane and kill everybody on
board. Right. They have that movie, 1993, that explains it.
Yeah, so, you know, they used it as a way to kind of unify the country and say, hey, look, you know, even in the moment we were being attacked, we were fighting back. Right. And we can't not fight back, or else we're going to let these terrorists win. And they used that from the very moment the attack happened, that, hey, we're already fighting back. You know, it wasn't even – they basically led the war with, you know, look, you know, these 40 people attacked the cockpit and we're helping protect America now. We're going to go protect America for the next, what's it been, 19 years now?
Yeah, almost 2 decades for sure.
Yeah, the endless war. And it's what Eisenhower warned of with the military-industrial complex, mm-hmm. and it's just sickening to think about.
George H.W. Bush was a big proponent of the Nazis, and he funded them during World War II, made billions of dollars, and his dad, Samuel Bush, made millions off of World War I. It's a family thing that they're just warmongers making billions and billions of dollars off war. Like, that's all this is about.
I mean, that's what most of the large political families in the global cabal is. You know, it's bloodlines and things that have been going on for hundreds, if not thousands of years, that have been the power structure. So you're exactly right on that. But let's get back to Shanksville. And so 2 days after the attacks happened, there's a CNN article, you know, talking to all the people on site. And they say that they've found debris from the crash site at least 8 miles away from the initial site. So the initial story, like I said, is a nosedive at 500 plus miles an hour at a 40 degree angle into a soft field, essentially. And you're trying to tell me that part of that wreckage is going to end up 8 miles away? It doesn't seem very realistic that a plane that leaves as small of a crater as it did, and the official FBI story is that the ground basically ate it. The story is that the ground was so soft and the plane came in with such a high impact that the plane basically buried itself in the ground, and that's why there was no wreckage.
Yeah, if you look at photos and videos from the day it happened of that crash, you can't see any, like, no fuselage, no giant metal parts from the wings. Like, you barely see any wreckage from that flight.
Yeah, no discernible evidence of a plane crash. Like, you can look up any other major plane crash in the history of the world, any passenger plane crash, and obviously they weren't crashing into the ground at 400 miles an hour because they were trying to save these people. But
right.
They don't. These planes don't just disintegrate. It just doesn't happen like this. So, you know, but, and another thing is the coroner in Somerset County, his name's Wallace Miller. I'm actually thinking about reaching out to him and seeing if he would, like, you know, if I could get a quote from him, because everything, all the research I've ever done in 9/11, it doesn't look like he's done a lot of appearances after 9/11. And yeah, I'd just be interested to reach out to him and, you know, kind of get some information about what actually happened on that day before.
Yeah, he's probably been paid off. Good luck with that. But, you know.
Yeah. So anyways, there's a lot of weird things that happened in Somerset. But one of the things that a lot of people note is a small white plane was found in the area. And I know about the private jet from a company in Greensboro, North Carolina, that was sent there to kind of identify where the plane wrecked. But this is a different white plane that was seen before the crash actually happened. And a woman named Susan McElwain, that I have a video link to in that document, talks about how she is driving down a road and she ducks in her car because she thinks this plane is going to crash close enough to her where she thinks, you know, like, she ducked. So, yeah, she ducked, and obviously, like, if you're going to be ducking from something, then obviously it's close enough to your car where it's, you know, giving you the impression that it's going to cause right. you harm. And
flies
the plane
dangerously low overhead.
Right, and the plane that they said was, that's documented being in the area, was at 3,000 to 4,000 feet. And 3,000 to 4,000 feet, You know, I've been in Utah with 2,000-foot cliffs next to me. If you double that, it's not going to give you the impression that you need to duck under it. So the fact that she felt the need to duck is pretty indicative that this plane was much lower than the plane that they note in the FBI reports. So that's one of the things. And another thing is Wallace Miller said when he got to the site, the coroner in Somerset on the day that it happened, he said that he quit being a coroner within 20 minutes. He couldn't find body parts, but they could find things like wedding rings, driver's license, passports, just like they found in 9/11 or in World Trade Center explosions. They found alleged passport on the ground of the street. Yeah, that seems very highly unlikely with the fireball that everybody saw around the world.
Right. I agree with that completely. And another thing that's sketchy is that the four planes that were hijacked on 9/11, the capacities of those planes, the people that were on board, it were like 50 to 75% lower than the average for that day. So it's almost like they hijacked planes that were at low capacity, or they, if these planes even were real, they lowered the number of people on them so they wouldn't have to make up as many death stories almost. That's how I feel like it happened. I don't know about you.
But it's just less loose ends that you have to tie up. If you name of 500 people that died on these planes, then obviously that's 500 families that are going to have to say, oh yeah, that person went missing on 9/11. But you're right. I also, that's in my document next to the names of the flights. I put the amount of people that were on each flight. And a typical 757 or 767, the two type of planes that were hijacked that day, can hold in excess of 200 people on a normal flight, including crew and passengers, things like that. And the two planes in New York, the first plane had 92 passengers. The second plane had 65 passengers. So both under half capacity, if not a third capacity. The plane that attacked the Pentagon had 64 passengers. So again, third capacity. And the plane that crashed in Shanksville only had 44 people on it. So like you said, well low under capacity. I mean, I'm about to do a lot of flying here in COVID times, and I don't think I'm going to be getting on a plane with 44 people on it. I think that the airlines understand that if you're flying a plane with 44 people on it, you're not
making any money on that. That's for sure.
They're not. Yeah, it's a very high cost business. Wendover Productions is a channel on YouTube that goes into the airline industry and pretty in depth, and he can tell you all about it. But so let's transition from Shanksville to the Pentagon. Just like in Shanksville, in the Pentagon, there's not much plane wreckage. So there's a few things that they've identified as like a piece of a fuselage and supposedly an engine. The Rolls-Royce engines that were crashed into the Pentagon, I believe they're Rolls-Royce. They're either Rolls-Royce or Pratt & Whitney. I believe they're Rolls-Royce in the Pentagon. Are 9 feet tall, 10 feet tall engines in diameter. They weigh 10,000 pounds. They are incredible pieces of machinery that do not just disappear. And you never find either one of these engines or see holes in the walls from these engines or, you know, any piece that's discernible from one of these engines in any, either one of those wreckages, Flight 93 or the Pentagon. And it just makes you wonder where did these giant 10,000 pound engines just disintegrate to?
Right. It couldn't have broken into a million pieces and just disintegrated. There has to be some form of wreckage. You know, the Pentagon,
whether it's molten metal or something, there's going to be something.
They'll put those pictures of a Boeing 757 up against the Pentagon hole that is there. And, you know, like the wings don't even make an impression. Like if the wings of that plane hit the building the way they said it did, there would be a hole four times as large, you know?
Yeah, you're 100% correct. So a lot of people are familiar with the Pentagon post-collapse. So people don't understand before that facade, that outer layer of the Pentagon collapsed and made the larger hole that everybody's accustomed to referencing with the Pentagon. the hole was much smaller when fire crews and emergency responders first descended on that scene. So if you Google Pentagon pre-collapse photos, and you might have to do a little digging because they just suppress all this stuff now. A little side note, while you're doing a lot of this digging on YouTube, when you Google things that you think might bring up a YouTube video that you're used to seeing or know is on YouTube, you have to sort by views, not by relevance. If you sort by relevance, they will suppress your information and not show you what you actually are looking for. If you search by views, then the stuff that people actually watch and that you're normally looking for will be shown. So that's just a quick side note. Sorry to derail. But
no, that's great. There's a lot of suppression of information going on right now, especially in the truth community that's trying to bring out a lot of this. And people call it conspiracy information, but it's really the truth. And Google and big data has been really, really trying to suppress all that.
Yeah, for sure. And YouTube, I've noticed, has been really bad about the 9/11 stuff the last couple of years. Like, I've been pretty avid about talking to people I'm close with about this and kind of showing them the light, so to speak. And a lot of times I'll go to look up a video I know I've shown a dozen other people, and I'm like, this video has been removed, or I can't get to this video for some reason. It takes me a lot more steps than it used to, and it's pretty troubling, honestly.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so more about the Pentagon. There's been a lot of speculation about, like, okay, did a plane hit the Pentagon, or did a missile hit the Pentagon, or did a bomb go off, whatever. How do we not have a clear video of supposedly one of the most secure buildings in the world? It's the head of the United States Department of Defense, a department that spends over $700 billion a year, and we don't have a video of what hit that building coming in clearly? You're lying. You are being dishonest. And I know for a fact that there's something on those videos that they don't want you to show you, or the FBI wouldn't go and confiscate every single security tape and private cameras video within a 3-mile radius of this incident for, you know, evidence or whatever, and then not release them. If they wanted the facts to be known, they would release them. They'd be like, hey, look, you can see this plane hitting the Pentagon right here. They show you that video of the building in New York City getting hit over and over and over again. If they try to tell you, oh, well, we don't want to show those people dying, or we don't want to whatever, you replay that building getting blown up in New York City over and over and over again. If you're worried about showing people dying, you're never allowed to show that clip either again.
Right.
Ever again either.
Yeah. So I think with the Pentagon, they've only released two different angles and only a couple handfuls of frames of footage, like total of the Pentagon plane.
100% correct. So I think it's a Sitco station, which is only accessible to Pentagon employees, which is kind of across the yard and across the highway from where it happens, has a pan of the gas station pumps like every gas station does. Right. And you can basically just see an explosion off in the distance. You can't see the aircraft or the projectile that hits it. You basically just see a plume of fire and smoke in the horizon. And the other frames and video that you're referencing is a security cam photo next to the heliport and fire pad on the Pentagon south face that was hit. And it pans across the lawn, and all you can see is a projectile, or what they call the nose of the plane, entering to the right frame.
It's a only white a couple streak. Frames of video, yeah.
Yeah, a white streak with some smoke or whatever behind it, and then a fireball. Yeah. So it's very minute. It is a very snapshot of what happened. And there's numerous pictures of cameras all along the perimeter of the Pentagon that are pointing right at the impact zone and right at the line of sight where this plane supposedly flew right down this highway and hit 5 light poles on the way to the Pentagon. So if you've never heard about it, this plane supposedly flew close enough to the ground to knock 5 light poles out of their foundation, but did not strike the ground as it approached the Pentagon. So it was close enough to the ground to hit light poles, but it did not ever hit the ground before it made impact to the side of the building. It was a immaculate feat of airmanship if this man actually flew this plane the way they say he did.
All right, there's a website called like 911pilots.com or .org or something like that. And it's about a bunch of pilots that come out and say, like, the maneuver that the official documents say that pilot did to hit the Pentagon is absolutely...
His name's Hani Honjour.
There you go.
Hani Honjour, and they say he made a 270-degree turn. So for you that aren't the greatest geometrists, it's three right turns, basically. So, like, imagine if you drew a big circle and... but you finished going left instead of straight back up. And he hit the side of this building going 500 miles an hour at sea level, which is also theoretically impossible, which is what most of these pilots are saying. They're saying, yeah, these planes are designed to go 500 miles an hour at 30,000 feet where the air is so much thinner. When you're at sea level, the air is so much denser that you can't get the same kind of aerodynamics, so you can't go as fast because you have more drag on your aircraft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say the website is 911pilots.org. I'm looking it up right now, and they have a bunch of information and a bunch of pilot whistleblowers that are basically demanding the truth about this and saying the official story is a bunch of horseshit. That's all I wanted to add.
Yeah, no, for sure. Because like you're saying, Hani Honjour, the pilot that supposedly pulled off this miraculous maneuver that these pilots on that website have tried in flight simulators that have been unable to replicate. The flight instructors at the school that he was training at said, quote, "I'm still amazed to this day that he could have flown into the Pentagon," end quote. He could not fly at all. That is a direct quote from an employee that was training him at the facility that he was supposedly learning how to be a pilot at, that, you know, gave him all this knowledge to fly a 757 into the side of the Pentagon.
He only had experience flying, like, single-prop planes. Am I wrong? Like,
no, like Cessnas and stuff. Yeah. So then that's where this guy is basically, like, they're not just going to put you in a jumbo jet first time off the runway. They're going to make you learn on a small, you know, two-seater where if you mess up, the instructor can just say, all right, hands off the wheel, I got this.
Right.
And it's, you know, more low risk, like one of those stunt planes that they basically turn the engine off in midair, then start it back up and stuff like that. Like, you know, I'm pretty sure one of the tests that you do when you're getting your pilot's license is they force you to stall out in the air, basically. Like, they fly up high enough where it's going to be safe and everything, and they force you to stall out, start your plane back up, and be able to, like, catch yourself before you hit the ground, basically. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this dude was not nearly at that point. He was, you know, barely figuring out how to take off and land. The other funny part is the day before 9/11 happened, Donald Rumsfeld, the Department of Defense Secretary, came out and said that we cannot account for over $2.3 trillion, with a T,
which is insane.
Dollars. Yeah. They cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
Yeah, a couple million maybe I can understand, but trillion is literally thousands of millions of dollars. Like, how does that just go missing?
It is an unfathomable amount of money. Like, when they like, if you go and like look on TikTok or YouTube or whatever of a video of like, oh, this grain of rice is a representative of $100,000, and then they show you Jeff Bezos' wealth and it's like 60 pounds of rice or something stupid.
Yeah, it's literally unfathomable, exactly the word.
And then it's 10 times that.
Yeah.
It's not even, it's 500 pounds of rice.
So, yeah, like, it just went missing from the budget. We don't really know what happened to it.
It's black budget stuff. And just so happens that the accounting section of the Pentagon that was kind of doing the auditing and stuff like this, that also coincidentally was the same wing of the Pentagon that underwent bomb resistant renovations. So they built up this side of the Pentagon to be more resistant to bombs and missile attacks. And it just so happens that that was the place that got hit on 9/11.
Yeah, it was the same thing with the World Trade Center's North and South. They did renovations on certain levels exactly where the planes hit to, like, make them stronger. And I'm pretty sure they were just planting explosives to do this, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, if you're going to be there's a clip, so we can jump to the New York now because there's not too much more about the Pentagon. If there's anything, you know, we'll jump back to it. Yeah. But so, you know, moving to 9/11 or New York, whenever I say, like, that's what I was saying earlier. Like, when people say 9/11, you just think about what happened in New York. You don't really think about
the Twin Towers falling. Yeah.
The Twin Towers, yes. Yeah. So his name's Peter Jennings, I believe, was the ABC news reporter that said, when you are getting at these buildings, so after the South Tower had fallen around 10 o'clock, you know, they talked to one of the reporters on the ground, and he's like, I'm four blocks north of the towers, and the building's collapsed. They're like, a couple floors? He's like, no, the whole building. And Peter Jennings later in the broadcast goes, you know, anybody that's been around these kind of things knows that if you're going to demolish a building like this, you need to get at the under infrastructure. Mm-hmm. He used those words specifically. And like you're saying, there was most notably was the elevator renovations that were going on before 9/11 that would have gave people access to these core columns that would have need to be cut for the building to collapse in the way that it did. So there was a way that people were accessing that part of the building at the time that it would have needed to been accessed to plant explosives. Another part of this whole thing is when Larry Silverstein, the guy that bought the World Trade Centers, put an insurance policy out for him and tried to claim two terrorist attacks and claim twice the insurance policies, eventually settled for less. But so it's kind of a crazy story. So he bought the properties and they originally had $1.5 billion in coverage. He eventually negotiated with over two dozen different insurance companies. They didn't go into detail in it, but I'd imagine he said, like, okay, I want you to insure the top 10 floors of the building. And I want this company to insure the next 10 floors or whatever. He eventually pieced it out where they were insured for $3.5 billion between, like I said, a dozen different companies or whatever the hell it was.
Mm-hmm.
After the 9/11 attacks, he was on the phone with his insurance company saying, hey, that's two separate attacks. I want $7 billion. They were in court for years, and eventually in 2007, he settled for $4.5 billion, the largest insurance payout in history. And if you go back even further, a lot of this, in my eyes, kind of stems from what was the asbestos removal. So he got this entire property on a deal, basically, because the Port Authority knew that asbestos was going to have to be removed from all these buildings, the airports, et cetera, and they needed money to do it. So they were selling these properties off so other people would have the liability to do it. In 2001, the Port Authority sued their insurance companies for $600 million to try and get money to help pay off the asbestos renovations and remove. They ended up losing that claim, I'd imagine, because it would set a precedent for that insurance company to have to pay out everybody else that has asbestos in their house. And I don't think that the courts want to do that. So anyways, you know, $600 million to remove this asbestos gives you a general cost of the undertaking that would have taken to remove the asbestos from every floor on two separate 110-story buildings.
Right.
Hundreds of millions of dollars. So it's easier to just blow them up. But if they would have tried to propose that back then, obviously that cloud of asbestos that went around New York and gave thousands of people cancer, I shouldn't be laughing. Like, it's not a funny matter.
Mm-hmm.
The asbestos and dust and fine particulates that caked lower Manhattan was cancerous.
Yeah,
and
there's still lawsuits going around for that.
Right, exactly. And they wouldn't have let these people just demolish the buildings if they wanted to, because they would have said, no, that asbestos is going to get airborne and hurt people. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was out of his hands at that point. So now he's not liable. If anything, he caught $4.5 billion for it.
Right.
So that whole part of it is very fishy and seems like someone was trying to catch a check rather than write a check.
No doubt. Let me ask you this. before we get into World Trade Center 7 and that whole thing, the third building that fell, even though only two planes hit, do you think there's any possibility of direct energy weapons being used from space to demolish these buildings? Or do you think there was explosives planted in these buildings beforehand?
So I haven't done enough research on direct energy weapons to really have a say. I know there's a one prominent researcher that's put out a book and a couple full-length documentaries on the subject, and I've kind of looked into some of, I believe it's her research. Yeah. And I've looked into it a little bit, but when you get down to it, a lot of like the pictures at Ground Zero, there's core columns that have those
cut at 45-degree angles. Yeah,
exactly. Those indicative splices on those rebar and those I-beams that are, you know, basically thermite charges. And you talk to the scientist from BYU, his name's Stephen Jones, that has analyzed that toxic cancerous dust that fell all over Manhattan. Mm-hmm. He analyzed that and saw nano fragments of
little iron balls that are only
the iron balls, right? The iron balls as well. I was talking about the pieces of nanothermite that they expect are theorized to be like the little red chips that they said they found in the dust.
Yeah,
that was they said it had the same I forget the word for the specto something.
Yeah, specto.
Where they burn it and they see the energy that's released. It had the same energy release as thermite, except greater. So it was thermite built in a greater capacity that they were able to replicate. So it was, that's why they thought it was, you know, a nanograde or a military grade thermite that was being used, because it was more explosive than the stuff that they could replicate in their lab with the things that a university lab can purchase, which are much more than the average person could. Right. Or a group of 19 terrorists with box cutters for that matter.
Right, but the military has the power to buy and control things that are out of the public's hand. You know, they say the government has technology that's decades ahead of the public's, you know. Before cell phones existed.
Yeah, and I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if they did.
Tip of the iceberg, you know.
Oh, for sure. But, you know, this whole thing is predicated on the Project for a New American Century. So there's a group of neoconservatives. Yeah. It was a neoconservative think tank, including Dick Cheney, the vice president, Donald Rumsfeld, who we mentioned before, the defense secretary, Jeb Bush, the president's brother, Paul Wolfowitz. There was a group of these conservative minds that basically was running the Bush administration that came together in the late 90s and I believe 2000 and came out with a report called the Project for a New American Century.
Yeah, it was in the fall of 2000 that was released, I think.
Yeah, I believe you're right.
Yeah.
And it says there's a section titled Rebuilding America's Defenses.
A new Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, you're right. You knew what I'm getting to.
Yep.
So there's a quote that says we're not going to be able to get to a point where America's a superpower where we're rebuilding our defenses unless, quote, process of transformation, comma, even if it brings revolutionary change, comma, is likely to be a long one. Absent some catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor, which is exactly what they got 13 or 14 months after they published this report.
Exactly.
So, you know, it almost seems too good to be true, right? Like, hey, we want to get America to be top dog again, and we're not going to be able to do it. We're not going to be able to do it without a big attack on America to like galvanize the force again. Like I said, that goes back to the Flight 93 thing, where they could literally make Hollywood propaganda like United 93. Or Flight 93, I believe there's both movies made.
I believe that was 100% propaganda, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and don't get me wrong, if that story's true, that great, they saved lives, and that is a very noble sacrifice of them to realize that those 40 lives can be saving 400 or 4,000 lives down the road if that plane actually did crash into something. But I don't necessarily think that that is what actually happened on that day. I believe that that plane was shot out of the sky, and that's why you're finding debris 7-8 miles away from where the supposed crash should have happened.
Yeah.
If the plane even crashed there at all.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's people that think that none of the flights actually even existed, and that, like, the flight that crashed into the South Tower, the second one, was a hologram. Like, I mean, there's some crazy theories, and I don't want to get too deep because that kind of drives people away. But the main point is here, the government knew about this, not necessarily the whole government, but at least the higher-ups, and they orchestrated the whole thing.
There are people that are complicit without a doubt. So, and they know things that they are not telling us, and there are people out there that were never even questioned. So before 9/11 happened, the day before, 90 times the average trade volume of puts was put on United Airlines. It's basically a bet saying, hey, this airline's going to fail.
Right.
And they put in 2,000 contracts, you know, worth roughly $180,000. And, you know, 5 days later, after 9/11 happened, those contracts were worth now $2.1 million. So something is awry here. There's no reason that there should be 90 times the average trade volume right before something happens that's going to tank this value stock or this stock's value.
It's the same thing happening. New is happening.
100% insider trading. The same thing happened for American Airlines, Morgan Stanley, Marshall McLennan, all the, like, some of the bigger leaseholders in World Trade Center 1 and 2. So all these big companies that these people or these orchestrators knew were going to take a hit, they put options on them to fail. They cashed in. They also put options in on Raytheon, Halliburton, other defense contractors like that, because they knew in a couple months' time, they were just going to start pumping out machines, out missiles, pumping out bombs, everything that they needed to start fighting the quote-unquote war on terror.
Like I said earlier, the Bushes are literally a family of warmongers. Prescott Bush, Samuel Bush, George H.W., George W., they all just push war to make money. That's all it is.
People have been pushing war to make money for
as long as people. Right, exactly. So, one of the things that is a smoking gun for me, not necessarily World Trade Center 7, but the fact that George Bush was at an elementary school reading a book when the first tower got hit, into this. And they let him stay there for like half an hour and finish the book. Like today, if a major structure got hit by a plane and there was terrorists, there were planes in the air that were hijacked, the president would be taken away by the Secret Service and put in a bunker. He would be an obvious target. But with George Bush, they just let him sit there. They knew he wasn't in danger. They knew he was safe. They just let it happen. Like, and that's one of the things that makes me 100% believer that 9/11 was an inside job.
Without a doubt. I'm so glad you brought this up, because it was one thing that I, to be honest with you, kind of overlooked in a lot of my prep for this. And that is one of the biggest smoking guns of the whole day. So, like I was saying earlier, the first plane, a lot of people said, okay, maybe this is an accident. Planes have ran into buildings before.
Right.
We didn't know it was a commercial-sized jet. They thought it might have been a small, like, Cessna, like we were talking about earlier. As soon as that second plane hit, there's a video of supposedly the White House chief of staff walking in, leaning down, whispering into George W. Bush's ear and saying, the second tower has been hit. We are under attack. Right. And you just see his dumbass blank stare out into the childs of kids while they're reading Curious George or whatever the fuck it is. And you're exactly right. At that moment, if he's saying we are under attack, he's not the one telling him that. It's the Secret Service coming in, grabbing him by the arm, saying, whispering that to him. He's saying, hey, everybody, thanks for your time, but I have something that's a little more pressing right now.
Right.
We're going to be like, you know, something that's not going to cause them fear. They're going to stay calm. Like, hey, I'm the fucking president. Like, I have shit to do. I'll be right back. And then they're whisking him away to his helicopter to get on Air Force One to fly around
in a safe space. Yeah, exactly.
Right. As soon as they know, as soon as they quote unquote say the nation is under attack, it's not like you said. He was at Booker T. Washington for almost an hour afterwards.
The schedule.
The schedule was posted out The schedule was known.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it wasn't like it was some secret thing he did last minute and the terrorists never would have known he was there. His location was known. There's no reason that they wouldn't have thought, okay, this elementary school and all these kids and the president is a target. They, in theory, know where we're at and we need to get the fuck out of here. Exactly. They should have – it's either gross incompetence by the Secret Service and every single one of them should have been fired of their job and replaced – which I don't think happened. I think the exact opposite happened. I think a lot of these people got rewarded for their service and their acts of bravery in this moment of terrorist action. But the exact opposite is true. Like you're saying, there's no reason that president should have been in a place that was disclosed 3 days earlier for an hour after we were quote-unquote under attack.
I agree wholeheartedly. And do you want to get into World Trade Center 7 and all? Because I feel like that is one thing –
So we'll get into World Trade Center. One thing, the last thing I want to say about the two Twin Towers is if you're going to go look at somebody's story about the Twin Towers, look at my man William Rodriguez's story. And like I said, if you're going on YouTube, you're going to have to search William Rodriguez's story, or I can share this Google Drive to you. They'll suppress the stuff. He was a worker in the ground floors of the World Trade Center. He was working in basement level one. And what he did was he was janitorial or maintenance, or, you know, was running the under infrastructure of this building that, like, made everything else work on top. And he says he remembers when the building was hit, he remembers a distinctive boom above him, like, you know, distant boom.
Yep.
And then a force that blew him up from underneath of him.
Right.
Which, like I said earlier, was the under infrastructure. Like, you have to get under these buildings to take them down. It's a 2,000-foot building. Like, you can't flick the top off and expect the 1,500 feet underneath it to fall
into
down
its too. Footprint at free fall speeds. Yeah, just won't happen.
Impossible. Yeah. So you can watch this man's YouTube video and listen to the first responder and the first hand witnesses before you listen to me. Go out and do your own research. I'm just going to reiterate that fact right now. But William Rodriguez, he'll tell you his story of him looking eye to eye to a man that had his skin hanging off of him from this explosion that happened in the basement levels. And then they heard another explosion, and what he tells is completely contradicts everything else that happened, you know, in the official story, because he's talking about explosions coming from the basement and how Popular Mechanics and all the people that, you know, NIST and all these people that explain the official story, they say that a plume of jet fuel fell down the elevator shafts and created a fireball that fell the entire way down the elevator shafts that burnt this man. And yeah, exactly. That fireball coming from the ceiling is not going to blow these people up from his feet. He said he felt an explosion from his feet blow him towards the ceiling. Mm. Like I said, go to YouTube, watch this man's YouTube video. If you want, I will share this document. I'll probably tweet it, so check out that. And
we can link it on Twitter for sure.
Yeah, I'll definitely link it on Twitter after Mitch posts the podcast, or I share it. So it's a crazy story, and it'll explain to you why there were bombs in that building. These people documented the bombs in the building, and if you look at the footage that day, the entire lobby of 9/11 has the windows blown out. You know, you don't see the windows blown out of every building in New York or all up the World Trade Center, but why is the lobbies what windows blown out? So it's crazy. But yeah, go into World Trade Center 7. Lead us off. I've been doing a lot of talking. So
I'm free to let you go. But this is a third building, and there's even another building. World Trade Center 6 and even World Trade Center 5 had major damage. And that's how people get into, like, direct energy weapons from the sky. And I don't know about all that. But
can I stop you? The only thing that I see, the difference between those two buildings and 1, 2, and 7 for me, is 1, 2, and 7, they found pools of molten steel from NASA imagery under these buildings for, I'm not exaggerating, it was months.
Months.
It was October, November. They said they were literally creating lakes under these buildings for 6 to 8 weeks after.
Tell me how jet fuel burns for months long, creating molten steel.
Yeah, look up NASA imagery of World Trade Center site and stuff like that. Like, underneath 1, 2, and 7, there were, you know, 2,500-degree pools of molten steel that couldn't be possible from anything other than, like, thermite or maybe a direct energy weapon. I'll let you keep going in with that because I'm not.
I don't know if that's the answer to this or not.
Right, but let's talk, because I'm not too educated on it. So let's.
It's possible, but three buildings fell.
Explain it for people that might not be. Explain a direct energy weapon for people that might not be familiar with it.
So direct energy weapons, it goes back to Reagan with the whole Star Wars program. They were going to send satellites with lasers or missiles up into space, and then they passed some bills where you couldn't put weapons into space, but apparently they did. And direct energy weapons, look up Rod of God. There was explosions in China that they think these have happened. The explosion in Beirut might even been a direct energy weapon a few weeks ago. Who knows? But it's basically space satellites fucking shooting laser beams or the kinetic energy weapons down from the sky.
If you've ever played Gears of War, it's kind of like the Hammer of Dawn.
Right, weapon. Exactly. 100%.
You basically like point an area out and a laser beam comes down from space and just evaporates it. So like,
exactly.
That's kind of the best comparison if you've ever played Gears of War. Hammer of Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, keep going. So, World Trade Center 7.
Yeah, all I wanted to say is that a third building fell at free fall speeds into its own footprint, and they just said, yeah, it was from structural fires from the other towers that fell. But it was a controlled demolition. There's a kink in the middle of the building in the video that it literally, if you watch it next to a video of controlled demolition, it's the exact same thing. But if you don't think that they destroyed these destroyed these buildings with explosives and demolition supplies, I don't know what to tell you. It's the biggest red pill there is. It'll send you down the rabbit hole.
Right, exactly. Like I said at the beginning of this episode, I'm not sitting here claiming to know all the facts. Right. All I'm sitting here claiming is to know that I know the official story is full of holes and is bullshit, in my opinion, and we're not being told the truth.
Exactly.
So, it's just, like you were saying, World Trade Center 7 was never hit by a plane, but yeah, it fell in the same fashion in its own footprint, just like World Trade Centers 1 and 2 were. It fell at free fall speed roughly in 10 seconds and missed the National Institute of Science and Technology. National Institute of Science and Technology that I referenced earlier. Their official report on World Trade Center 7 blames the collapse of Column 79 for the systematic collapse of the entire building. Now, if you've ever looked up architects and engineers for 9/11 truth, this is one of the things that they will say is the biggest farce of the entire official story. There's no way that one column, so it's column 79, so there's at least 78 other columns. Right. I'm not sure, to be honest with you, how many it might be 80, 90 columns. I don't think there were many more than 79. But if you think that one column out of 80, let's say, columns is going to cause an entire building to fall down in the way that it did, it's just irrational, and it goes against everything that these architects and engineers went to school and learned. There's a building called World Trade Center 7, This is an Orange, and I have it linked in that document and stuff, and it basically starts like, this is an orange. You know this by visual identification, and then it goes and shows you, like, four videos of controlled demolitions, and then it shows you, like, four angles of World Trade Center 7, and you're like, maybe it was brought down by explosives. Like, those look exactly the same. That's insane.
There's no other explanation. The government's lying to us. They knew about it. I don't know who in the government knew about it, but they did.
Yeah. So, another thing about World Trade Center 7, like, oh, people will be like, well, it was burning for whatever, like, you know, hours, and you're not taking that into fact, and these diesel tanks caught on fire. It is a steel-framed skyscraper. There are three steel skyscrapers that have ever fallen due to office fires in the history of the world. the World Trade Center's 1, 2, and 7.
Right. You no look, other skyscrapers ever fallen from structural fires. Like,
yeah, you can look up. There's a Shanghai Inferno that there's literally like a, I think it's a 60 or 70 story building that the entire building is engulfed in flames. It's a 700 foot fire. That's not an exaggeration. And at the end of the building, or at the end of the fire, excuse me, the entire frame, the entire steel frame of the building is still intact.
Yeah.
And everything is gutted from it, which is what you would expect to see in an office fire. Right. What we saw in 9/11 is not that. These buildings were turned to dust, literal dust that blanketed lower Manhattan.
Yeah, that's why people think it was a kind of a rod of God, or, you know, the Gears of War thing you're saying, that literally obliterated these buildings into dust. It could have been thermite. It could have been nanothermite that did it. I don't know. But it wasn't two planes that took down three buildings.
There's not a chance.
Not a chance.
Not in my mind, at least, and not in thousands of architects and engineers' minds. And like I said, it's architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth. Google them. Listen to the experts. Listen to the first responders. Listen to the people that were actually in these buildings on that day. Don't listen to me. Do your own research. Another person that you can go look up, his name is Barry. His name is Barry Jennings. Anytime you're going down the rabbit hole, you know, look for people that you can assume that are credible sources. Like, look at this guy named Barry Jennings. The mayor's office in New York had an emergency response center that was stationed on, I believe it was the 23rd floor of World Trade Center 7. So whenever there was things like a terrorist attack or a hurricane, or
it would all get
any emergency in New York City, the mayor and his team of, you know, emergency responders were supposed to go to this bunker, basically, in the middle of World Trade Center 7, Solomon Brothers Building. And for whatever reason, on that day, they decided not to go because it was probably so close to the, you know, the event. Like, I mean, I can understand why they didn't choose that location.
Makes sense.
I mean, I can understand that, but these people were like, okay, this is my job. I'm going there. They got there. They're like, hey, we're in this place instead. So it was Barry Jennings, and I believe his name was Mr. Owens. I don't remember his first name. And that might be wrong, to be honest with you. But Barry Jennings, he's a heavyset man. He was in this building, and he was running out of this building. And he's done multiple interviews where he says there were explosions inside of World Trade Center 7. So he's running, and the floors are blown out underneath him. Like, floors of this building were blown up. It wasn't like they were burnt out. Like, he was running through them. They were just collapsed. So look up Barry Jennings. He's another person that will give you some literal firsthand inside the building knowledge of what happened in World Trade Center 7 on that day. And yeah, that's all I got to say about him.
Hey, amen. I appreciate it. We got to wrap up here. We're running out of time. I think this is a great.
Oh, come on. You need to go. You need the Joe Rogan, Alex Jones energy. Four hour podcast. Yeah, man.
What they want.
For sure. But this was, like you were saying earlier, this is a good kind of brief overview. If you guys want this document that I have, I can share it to you. It has a bunch of links in there that'll help you start to go down the rabbit hole yourself.
Yeah, we'll tweet it. I'm pretty sure everyone that listens to this follows me on Twitter. At least they should. At Mitchell Vukic, at AJ Vuk, follow us.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people listen to this are going to hear it from me too. So go out and listen to my brother. He has plenty of other podcasts that are awesome too. So go listen to those ones. Listen to them in the future. And you'll probably hear me back on here more, going deeper into one of these or something else in the future for sure.
No doubt, man. I'd love to have you back. We'll find a subject that you can do just as much research in as you did this one. It was great.
Yeah, for sure. If any of you guys out there want to know more, just contact me personally and I'll put you in the right direction. So.
Yeah. Thanks, brother. Appreciate it.
All right. Yep, you too. Talk to you later.
Peace.
You can deny all the things I've seen, all the things I've discovered, but not for much longer. Because too many others know what's happening out there. And no one, no government agency has jurisdiction over the truth.
Well, I hope you learned something during that episode. Like AJ said, it's always best just to do your own research. We are just curators in this pursuit of truth. trying to push people in the right direction. And I always try to bring out the crazier aspect of it. Like, I was going in direct energy weapons, and he was more on the thermite theory. And I respect that. There's probably more evidence for thermite, not space lasers, but it's always fun to think that things like that could be possible. And, alright, I'll try to get another episode out here in about a week or so. I know this one took a little longer to get out, and I apologize. Just busy guy. And that should do it. Take it away, Mulder.